Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. Today it is February 17. We have finished opening weekend mostly. A lot of teams are taking advantage of President's Day to kind of extend opening weekend to get a fourth game in. And Joe and I are going to do that as well. We're actually recording this a day early. We're on Sunday night, and we just finished ranking our top 25. So we're just gonna roll with the podcast right through the top 25 meeting. Joe, we don't normally do this. We usually take a night to sleep on it, but we're gonna have some, I guess, more instant reaction for the listeners today.
Yeah, I think that'll be good. I mean, it's certainly fresher in our minds at this point, and I think that'll be good for this discussion because it was not an easy one. I'm sure you, the listener, if you've been paying attention, you know there was a lot of carnage at the top of the rankings. We'll put it that way. So it was not easy to try to figure out what we were going to do. I mean, there was some philosophy going on, kind of a philosophical debate about, you know, who should get moved up where, because there are a lot of different potential answers, and we debated many. So I think it's good that we're kind of giving this instant reaction because, like, we're going straight from that debate to kind of hashing it out maybe in a little more long form here.
Yes, so if you haven't seen it, at baseballamerica.com, the new top 25 is topped by Michigan. Yes, the Wolverines are the new number one team in the country after going 3-1 in Arizona. That includes a win against Vanderbilt and a win against Arizona State, who were both preseason top three teams. So very impressive weekend for the Wolverines. Number two, we got Florida at two, Miami three, Texas Tech four, Vanderbilt five, Louisville six, Georgia seven, and Arizona State eight. For the rest of the poll, you can check out baseballamerica.com. The rest of it looks a lot less changed in the rest of the poll. Mississippi is the lone team coming into the rankings. They come in at number 15 after beating Louisville in a series there in Oxford. Ohio State drops out to make way for Ole Miss. They went 2-1. That normally keeps you in the rankings, but this week we had to make room for Ole Miss, and so Ohio State drops just off of the top 25 there. So headlining this, of course, is that Michigan is the number one team in the country. This is so fresh. I haven't had a chance to do the research for when the last time that happened was. So I'll have that online. You can check that out in Off the Bat or probably in the poll itself. But Joe, we talked about the idea of Michigan being number one. We talked about the idea of Florida being number one. I briefly considered the idea of leaving Vanderbilt alone. They went 1-2. The losses were both in the ninth inning, blown save situations. Ultimately, though, we end up with Michigan because it has those two top three wins. Florida, meanwhile, swept Marshall convincingly at home, but it is Marshall, and it was at home. And it's just a little harder. It was a little harder for me to split what Florida did from what Miami did or even Texas Tech, although I think Tech's competition was a little lesser than what the two Florida schools saw. So we went with Michigan, and you initially were not on board with that, but I was able to sway you.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it seemed like a leap to make from 8-1, but, you know, kind of the way you put it is that, you know, we're still kind of let me take a step back. This early in the season is not necessarily the point where we start doing the look at the resume game, because it's only one weekend, and if this type of weekend happens 6 or 8 weeks from now, it's a little bit different story. But this is week one, and I think you and I are both of the mind that we try not to overreact necessarily to small sample sizes, particularly this early in the season. But when you're left with what we had, you kind of have that has to play a little bit of a role. And so our other option, the other option we truly debated the most was Florida at one. But the point you made, and I agree, this is kind of what swayed me to put Michigan one, is that at this point in time, we're kind of looking at Florida, and yes, okay, they swept Marshall handily, but we're still kind of projecting Florida to be really, really good. Michigan, of course, there is some projection there still. They still have to do it, but what they've shown us is the high-end ability to travel across the country to Arizona, to beat Vanderbilt, to win two games on Saturday. They had to beat Cal Poly in Scottsdale, and this is no small thing. I mean, it's one thing to win two games of a doubleheader. It's another to win one game of a doubleheader in one city, get on a bus, drive across town, get off the bus, and then immediately start to play again. And oh, by the way, that game was against the number three team in the country in Arizona State, and then really handle them. I mean, you were there for that game, and there was really no point in which Arizona State threatened in that game against Hadjer and particularly offensively. So, when you take that into account, I mean, I think with, like I said, it's a lot of options that we kind of felt meh about. But given that Michigan was a team we already had a lot of belief in, given what they showed us this weekend, which was more impressive than really any of the other teams that were in the top 10 that we could have conceivably moved up, it was far and away the best resume. So it's a little early to be playing the resume game, but we really kind of were left with no choice.
Yeah, I don't like to talk resumes at this time of year, partially because I just don't know who's good and who's not good yet. It could turn out that these wins that I think are so good for Michigan turn out to be not so good. Now, I don't think they're going to be awful. You know, I think that we know that Vanderbilt is going to bounce back and that Arizona State is going to bounce back and that the Cal Poly is going to be a solid team. But, you know, I don't know what Marshall is, frankly. You know, what if Marshall is competing to win Conference USA like they did 3 or 4 years ago, whatever that was that they finished in second place? What if that's the Marshall team? What if Rutgers under Steve Owens really takes a big step forward and instead of being one of the worst teams in the Big Ten, they're at least a middle of the pack Big Ten team? And then that looks so much better for Miami than what we're looking at now. So I don't love to play the resume game at this juncture just because I don't know and none of us know. But when Vanderbilt goes 0-2 as the number one team, when Louisville loses a series at Ole Miss, and when Arizona State goes 2-2, winning two games against Villanova but losing that game against Michigan, we're left with this vacuum here. And you know, as much as I believe in the talent at Florida, to put them at number one right now just felt a little much. Whereas, you know, Michigan has these two wins that we at least right now think are good. Three wins, sorry, that we at least right now think are good and believe will be good throughout the course of the season. And, you know, I love the talent at Michigan too. I mean, I feel like I've made that clear throughout the preseason, the off season, go back to last season. Like I really like the talent at Michigan. So, you know, it's different. It's different to jump a team from eighth to first, basically at any juncture of the season, but especially on opening weekend. But this weekend was not a typical weekend, and it certainly wasn't a typical opening weekend.
Yeah. And you look at the teams we have at the top here too. And this is projecting forward a little bit, which we can do later in the week and more in depth, but you know, there's going to be an opportunity. The thing about it is the teams we have up near the top are going to have continued opportunities to prove themselves. Michigan's got another series with UConn coming up, or a true three-game series down in Florida. That's not going to be easy. You know, UConn showed a little something this weekend, even if it didn't really go truly like they would have wanted it to. And then Florida and Miami play each other this weekend. So now that could confuse the issue more if Michigan loses that series. And then, you know...
Well, no, if Michigan loses that series, the winner of Florida-Miami is number one. And sure. I'll just say that short of a sweep of UConn, Michigan's stay at number one could be short here. Like, I really hate the idea of dumping a team off of number one for going 2-1. But, you know, if if Florida or Miami looks really convincing this weekend, I mean, I would view the top spot as pretty open right now. We have Michigan number one because we have to have someone. But I would say that this situation is much more fluid than I usually view the number one.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not to give short shrift to Michigan, but that's just kind of the reality.
No, I'm not trying to do that at all.
Yeah, I mean, it just could be a transitional, you know, in pro wrestling terms, they'd say it might be a transitional champion, you know, where they're trying to get the belt, you know, a belt from one good guy to another good guy, but it has to go through a heel first, you know, a heel as a bad guy.
You've lost me on this one, Joe.
I mean, I'm not really a pro wrestling guy anymore, but, you know, there was a time when I was a kid when it was, and you'd see that where there's like a transitional champion because they have to get the belt from another guy, but the storyline doesn't call for it to go from one guy to the other. So yeah, I mean, that very well could be that. But I guess the point I was making, though, too, is like there is the possibility where it's not quite that clean, and we're sitting here again next Sunday trying to figure out what we're going to do with these teams that did various levels of impressive things. But, I mean, that's what makes it fun. I mean, we'll sit here and kind of agonize over this stuff. But at the same time, it is kind of fun to see a little bit of parity and to have to make these kind of decisions. And I'm, of course, all for the idea that, like, you know, this is more than – I mean, it's clear at this point that it's more than just a one-year thing that Michigan got to the CWS Finals last year. But it is kind of neat to see that – okay, wow, this team is really backing up that performance with what they've already done this year.
All right, so that is what happened in the top 25. Let's get to what happened on the field, which is, frankly, way more interesting. Joe and I are both still in Arizona. We were in Arizona all weekend. As you guys know, either if you've been listening to this podcast or following us on Twitter, Arizona was kind of the epicenter of college baseball. For opening weekend with the MLB 4 tournament where, you know, Michigan and Vanderbilt, UConn and Cal Poly all were. Oregon State was hosting its tournament. The Angels had their tournament. And Arizona State and Grand Canyon were both home as well. So there's a lot of baseball that we all saw or that we saw down here. Obviously, we're coming away very impressed with Michigan. But, Joe, Vanderbilt walks out of here at 1-2, and that's a team that we spent a lot of time this preseason saying was really, really good and that I thought could go back to back. I picked them to win the national title, and you know, now they're at 1-2, which is not what we would have expected here. So they did lose these two games in very tight fashion. They had a very good chance to walk out of here at 3-0, but they didn't. Why is that? And should there be any level of concern with Commodores fans?
No, I don't think so. I mean, think about it this way. I mean, I think Vanderbilt fans and, you know, Tim Corbin and the team would take the position they were in, you know, back on Friday night where they're up a run. They've got Tyler Brown on the mound in the ninth inning. What happened with Michigan there is probably not, if you play that scenario out 10 more times, Tyler Brown gets a save in 8 of them, 9 of them. So those things are just kind of going to happen. So I mean, to believe that was some sort of harbinger of things to come would be to believe that Tyler Brown's not going to be able to close out games for him. And that seems silly because I think there should still be a lot of belief in them. So really, I mean, we're talking about 2 1-run games here, and you were at today's game against Cal Poly. I was not, so I can't really speak to that. It seems like that game was maybe a little bit uglier. Maybe there was like a little bit more going on in that one, but from what I saw, I mean, the thing about Vanderbilt, too, is maybe this is just the time to get them. I mean, obviously, we ranked them number one. Obviously, they've got these high-end players with, you know, Rocker and Martin and Hickman and Eater and Brown, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's still a really young team in a lot of spots. I mean, they're starting a freshman catcher who, you know, had nice moments over the weekend, by the way. I mean, he was great at the plate on Saturday in their win. So he's had his moments, but, you know, that's kind of he's not the only freshman they've run out there. They've had all kinds of new players out there. So it's still a pretty young team. So maybe this is just a situation where this is the time when you can get Vanderbilt. And maybe by the time April or May rolls around, it's a little bit of a different story. So I think it's a situation where I don't think there's any real reason for concern here. I certainly liked what I saw individual talent-wise. Kumar Rocker minus one inning on Saturday was Kumar Rocker. And Mason Hickman was Mason Hickman on Friday. So obviously we reserve the right to change our minds if things really do kind of start to go south on Vanderbilt, but I certainly don't anticipate that happening based on 2 1-run losses in which they were leading in the ninth inning. That just seems like that'd be alarmist of me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The game today, the Sunday game, Jake Eater just didn't really have it. They tried a few guys out of the bullpen, and it was up and down. Eater's going to be better. He didn't have command of his secondaries today, and they'll get that corrected. We didn't see Jack Leiter. At some point, we'll see what Jack Leiter is all about, what he can bring to this this pitching staff. So I'm excited to see what that looks like when that opportunity does arise for him. We know there are going to be growing pains. I would say the one thing I would be concerned is too strong, but one thing I'm looking at that I know that they're going to need to clean up is that they made four errors today. And that's very un-Vanderbilt-like, and that's why they lost. It's that they had these four errors, and it contributed to the ninth inning rally for Cal Poly, and they got to get that fixed. And I assume that they will. I know how much emphasis Tim Corbin puts on defense, but that's one area where they've got to be better, and they've got to be better in a hurry, I would say, that I trust Jake Eater and Tyler Brown to work things out. But the defense, with so many new players in key positions, a couple freshmen up the middle, that's something that needs to be worked on, and I know will be worked on. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they leave with 2-1 run losses in games they're winning in the ninth inning. That's going to be fine. And Tyler Brown is strong enough mentally that I don't think he's going to be bothered too much by these two blown saves. I think he's going to be able to put them behind him and move on, like you expect a good closer to do. So we'll see where that goes from here. But you know, that it was a strange weekend for Vanderbilt. We knew that there were going to be growing pains. I just maybe didn't expect them to show up in quite the ways that they did on opening weekend. The other big time result from the weekend was Ole Miss beating Louisville. Louisville won the opener behind Reed Detmers. They kind of controlled that game. It was close early on with Nikhazy and Detmers both throwing pretty well, and Louisville kind of pulled away late, but it was a pretty strong victory for the Cardinals. And then the next 2 days, Ole Miss bounced back, got wins. Louisville had chances late, but Ole Miss was able to hold on. Some cases by the skin of their teeth. They won the finale on a strike him out, throw him out double play. Not your typical game ending. Mike Bianco told me he thought that he probably had been involved in a game that ended that way, but he couldn't pinpoint it. Maybe I've seen that before. It feels like something you must have seen before, but I don't know. But the point is, Ole Miss gets a win on Sunday to finish the series off. Gunnar Hoglund was really good for them on Saturday, and then they were just pretty solid offensively throughout the weekend after Detmers on Friday night. And this is another really young team, and the reason why we didn't have Ole Miss ranked coming into the season is just there was so much newness, and we weren't quite sure what to expect, especially in that lineup when you look at, you know, all the losses that they had a season ago, you know, in terms of Thomas Dillard and Greg Kessinger and Cooper Johnson. Those guys are all gone, and in a lot of cases they've been replaced by freshmen, but the kids are all right at Ole Miss, it looks like.
Yeah, certainly looks that way. And you know, if you were to ask me if there's any concern over Louisville, I might have a little bit different answer than I did with Vanderbilt. Maybe a little. You know, certainly part of that is injury based. You know, we got, you know, Lucas Dunn and now Alex Benelis with hamate surgery. That's typically an injury you can, you know, Shea Langeliers had that for Baylor last year, and it's typically one you can return fairly quickly from. However,
it's a month long. The standard is a month, but the problem is you can come back before you're fully recovered, so it saps your power in a lot of cases. Now, that wasn't the case in Langeliers last year, but in most cases, you break your hamate, just the way you hold the bat, like, that winds up sapping some of your power, which for Alex Benelis is really bad news if that comes to pass.
Yeah. So, I mean, so, and you know, those two guys are a big part of what they're doing offensively. And whenever we talked about, you know, what Louisville was going to do offensively, the conversation really started with those two. Now there's other pieces out there. Zach Britton's a nice piece, and you know, Justin Levy is a veteran and piece out there. So it's not to say they're going to be lost offensively, but with those two guys out, that's really tough. And then you look at some of the issues they had over the weekend, and it kind of mirrors a little bit of something that, you know, we saw last year a little bit where, you know, Bobby Miller on Saturday is a guy with absolutely electric stuff, but Ole Miss was on him early. And that's not to say this could be atypical. However, you know, Bobby Miller, for all of his stuff last season, ERA, you know, 4.5, 5, something, you know, between those two numbers. So wasn't always the cleanest. And Luke Smith was okay today, but just okay. And Detmers is great on the front end, but they're going to need one of those two guys or somebody else, I guess. But we assumed it would be one or both of those guys. They're going to need one or both of those guys to be something special on the weekends, I think. And that was a lot of my optimism for Louisville and my picking them to win national championships is not because I thought they'd have this dynamic offense, although I thought they'd be very good. It was more just that Detmers is great. He's already great. I think Bobby Miller could be great. And then if you're telling me that your third spot is just pretty decent, that could be good enough. So, and they had some bullpen struggles this weekend on top of it. So, my worry level is a little bit higher on Louisville when you stack the injuries on top of some of the problems that we saw this weekend, kind of mirroring weaknesses of last season a little bit.
Yeah, that one's going to be interesting. No Benelis is a problem, but, you know, he'll come back. ACC play starts in like 2 weeks, so obviously he's going to miss the start of that, but he'll be back before too long, and, you know, they're going to be good. It's just a matter of how good they can be, and a lot of that is going to ride on how good Bobby Miller gets. The stuff is really good. Just, like, how is it going to play? And then who else is going to step up in the lineup? Levi Usher looked pretty good this weekend, it seemed like, so... You know, that's a nice piece from a junior college transfer that, you know, he's a different kind of player, but he'll add some speed at the top of the lineup. And Louisville, it looks like, is going to be just another, it's going to be fast again. It's not necessarily going to be a power hitting team for a while, at least. So I'll be interested to see where they go from here. But more than what happened with Louisville, I think I was a little more impressed with what Ole Miss did, that the newcomers came in. They produced pretty well right away. Cale Baker and Hayden Leatherwood, both junior college transfers, both key additions to the lineup from the jump, and that's very important. Cale Baker hit a couple bombs on Saturday in that win, and Hayden Leatherwood picked up a bunch of hits. So that's big. And then Hayden Dunhurst behind the plate does the strike him out, throw him out double play, throws it from his knees to get Levy running at second, and you know, that's an impressive play. And so if those guys, those newcomers can seamlessly slide into the lineup and produce like that, you know, that's a really good sign for Ole Miss going forward, because while Nikhazy maybe wasn't at his best, I trust Doug Nikhazy to be really good, and Gunnar Hoglund was very good. So those two guys at the front of the rotation, if the lineup and defense can answer the questions that were raised because of all the departures, like I feel like Ole Miss can compete in an SEC West race that at least right now still looks very wide open to us. And we in the poll reflect that by jamming them right up with the rest of the SEC West teams that we can't separate, the LSU, Auburn, Arkansas, Mississippi State mix, from 9 to 15. Now they're all in there. I don't know who's going to win the division, but it's probably going to be one of those teams. And I'll be very interested to see how it sorts itself out over the course of the SEC season.
Yeah, one of the things we talk about with the really great programs, and in Louisville, interestingly, is a program we probably say this about more than anyone else, is that, you know, it's great to have these freshman classes or, you know, recruiting classes with junior college players in the case of some of these other guys that come in and are stars right away. It's equally or perhaps more important to develop guys along the way. And so you look at guys like Tim Elko and Kevin Graham, guys like that, and maybe they're just ready to make jumps. Both had their moments this weekend. That would be really huge too, that you're not just kind of you're not just banking on these guys who really starred opening weekend to be doing the same thing in late April when suddenly they're playing more games than they've ever played in their lives, and the pitching is better than they've ever seen before. And also, oh, by the way, they're college students now, and like, college is hard sometimes. So that, I think that's really important to have those guys that have been depth pieces become grow into starring roles. I think there's the opportunity for Ole Miss to show that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely a key. That's how you keep these things running, because it can't just be freshmen and junior college transfers every time. It has to be just the development piece. That's a big part of it. So a couple series wins that I thought were significant that weren't in the top 25 mix because the one spot that we were forced to create went to Ole Miss. We didn't even talk about anything else. Joe and I didn't, in terms of creating the top 25, who might come in. But both Texas and Cal State Fullerton, I thought, kind of put themselves on the radar, obviously not for this week to jump in, but I think we might be seeing both of those teams, traditional powers, coming off of very disappointing seasons in which they both missed the NCAA tournament. They both start the season very well, going on the road. Texas, not a too terribly long of a trip from Austin to Houston, but they went on the road to Rice, swept the Owls. Fullerton goes up to Stanford, their traditional opening weekend series. They win 2 out of 3 at Sunken Diamond. Did either of those jump for you, Joe?
Yeah, I think Fullerton over Stanford more so than Texas over Rice. I'm just still not sure.
How far is that trip from Austin to Houston? I've made it, but you've
made
it more often.
2.5, 3 hours. Okay. Yeah,
it's really, a big road test.
It's really not too bad. You stop at a Buc-ee's halfway. You know, it really breaks up the trip. So not too terribly bad.
But not a Sheetz. That's what we learned from Mike Rooney.
Not in that part of the country. Yeah, goodness gracious. That man does not care for Sheetz. That's what I learned. My goodness. I've never disliked anything more than Mike Rooney seemed to dislike Sheetz. Holy cow. But yeah, you stop at a Buc-ee's partway through. It's a fine trip. So, yeah, but I still don't know what to make of Rice. Like, I like some of the individual talents on Rice. I think they're...
I like a good poke bowl. That's what I like to make with rice.
Yeah, I'm more of a... yeah. You know, I've come around to, like, different types of rice. Like, I used to be kind of just like a... Well, I like fried rice, but who doesn't like fried rice? But, you know, I tend to be more of, like, a white rice over a brown rice. But now I do like a brown rice or, like, a seasoned...
Definitely brown rice all the way.
Yeah, but I think it's a sign of my palate expanding a little bit as I get a little bit older that I'm opening my mind to that kind of stuff. But, so I don't know what to make of that team. I think it's probably... this might be damning with faint praise because Conference USA isn't what it was, but I think it's probably a top 4 or 5 team in CUSA, which is to say that, you know, it's a team that if things break right could, challenge to win the conference tournament. And maybe you could squint hard enough and see a team that, I don't know, puts together something like an at-large resume because they play a difficult schedule. You win enough of those games, you know, they could be in that mix. So, but that's being said, I'm not going to bank on that. Whereas, with Stanford, I think we have a pretty decent idea of what Stanford is. We don't have them ranked. Others do. But, you know, they were certainly
I'll guess it did. But I don't want to speak for anyone else. You can look at their polls today.
Probably not anymore. Right. But point being, you know, they were like, depending on who you asked, they were, you know, a solid top 20 to 35 team. So I think we have a good feel for what Stanford is. And that was even with this, I think we think a solid regional team. With maybe perhaps a limited ceiling, but a pretty high floor given some of the pitching they have back. So I think that's a really good win for Fullerton. And this is big for Fullerton just because that's kind of been the problem recently for Fullerton is that they'll win some of their games in Big West play and they'll maybe split some 4-game series against some decent competition. But the last couple of years, at least, you know, thinking back on it, we're a little bit devoid of these kind of resume changing series wins. And so I think that can, I think the evidence for that is just the fact that their RPIs have just never really seemed to be anywhere near where they needed to be. And so I don't know that this Stanford win is going to really be something that ends up being a make or break thing, but certainly it's a step in the right direction from where they've been the last couple of years.
Yeah. And for as much time as I've spent kind of hating on the Big West this off season, it got off to a nice start. You got this series win for Fullerton. Cal Poly goes 2-1 in the MLB 4 tournament. Obviously finishes off the weekend with that big win against Vanderbilt. UCSB beat Sac State. There it is. The WAC favorite on the road, right? That was in Sacramento. And, you know, so those are three teams at the top of the conference last year, traditionally, whatever, that got off to nice starts. And then Long Beach, which last year finished in last place and just a ton of turmoil all season long. They start the Eric Valenzuela era off, there it is, with a nice series win of their own. So the Big West coming out firing here in 2020.
Yeah, and that's the, that certainly bodes well for their success. And it, The issue with that league has not been the quality. I think we've all kind of believed in. Now, the quality is not where it was, say, 10 years ago. I mean, that there's no comparison there. But what I'm saying is, looking at them as like, oh, that's a one-bid league, and they're really going to have to work to get two bids, probably doesn't reflect the talent in some of these teams out there. It's just a function of the computer numbers, specifically the RPI, that just hasn't been where it needs to be. So I certainly would welcome the Big West getting into contention to get two and maybe three teams in. Who knows? Let's really dream big here. But certainly a really good start. You know, you and I talked on the podcast coming into the weekend about like, hey, maybe this is Cal Poly's year to kind of get back into that. And we've obviously talked about UC Santa Barbara. I wrote him up as an under-the-radar team. So I think Fullerton was really, frankly, not a team we've talked a ton about coming into this season. I mean, I think there's an assumption that, oh, well, yeah, they're going to be at the top of the Big West. They always are. But I don't know that you or I really felt necessarily all that strongly about them as a regional team. But maybe this changes that calculus a little bit. And there's a reason to like a lot of teams in the Big West.
Yeah, I don't know which this says more about, whether it says more about Stanford or whether it says more about Fullerton. But Fullerton only gave up 4 runs on the weekend. Only 2 of them were earned. So we expect Fullerton to pitch, but that was a problem last year, was that they weren't pitching. They actually were decent offensively. That's usually the reverse. But they had a pitching issue last year. At least opening weekend suggests that that might be resolved. And the offense was still pretty solid, maybe even better than solid. They scored 13 runs in their 2 wins at Stanford. So I think that, you know, it's too early to say Fullerton's back. I don't want to say that yet, but that's a really nice start for the Titans. Joe, was there anything else that stood out to you around the country? I know that's a vague question. A lot happened. We had Grand Canyon beating Oklahoma State. We had Army winning on opening day and nearly winning a series at Duke. Duke needed a rally on Saturday to even that series, and then they handled the rubber game pretty well. But Duke very nearly ended up with a losing weekend against Army. You know, there were some, you know, big time, you know, numbers individually. There was John Rhys Plumlee eating a sandwich in the Ole Miss dugout that got some play.
I mean, that's the highlight.
You know, that there was a lot going on. So there were umpires going crazy.
Well,
what jumped for you this weekend?
Well, I mean, the umpiring thing was interesting. I mean, just quickly on that. I mean, I actually was getting asked about that. I don't know about you, but I got asked about that in press boxes, like wherever I went this weekend. It was definitely a topic of conversation, like, you know, what happened and what was it that the umpire thought he did and so on and so forth.
If you haven't seen it, what happened on Friday night was in the 9th inning of Michigan's game against Vanderbilt, freshman Jimmy Obertop took a called strike that he clearly didn't really like, and then draws a line in the batter's box. But he's drawing the back line of the batter's box, not so perpendicular to the plate, not where he thinks the ball crossed, which obviously is generally a no-no, but seemingly where he should be putting his foot in the batter's box. He's drawing that line with his bat. It's not facing the umpire when he does that, doesn't do anything as far as we can tell, and the umpire ejects him, no warning at all, just throws him out of the game.
So yeah, so there was that. I actually wanted to give a little shout out. That was a good, maybe just because we're out here in Arizona and there's a decent number of West Coast teams out here. Like, I kind of maybe was a little more in tune to what's going on the West Coast, but I feel like a shout out just in general to the West Coast. We talked about the Big West having a good weekend, but I think just kind of in general, Pepperdine goes 3-0 at the Angels tournament. And, you know, that wasn't necessarily a blockbuster field of teams out there, you know, San Diego, Minnesota, Oregon. But Pepperdine goes 3-0. That was a really good weekend for them. Shouts to Portland. Outscored Nevada 27-1 in a doubleheader on Friday. Ends up sweeping the series with a 6-4 win today, Sunday. So shouts to the Pilots. I can't imagine they've had many doubleheaders in their program history where they've scored more than 27 runs, if at all. Maybe back in the days when they were playing more, you know, lower division teams. There was a time when Division I programs did a lot more of that, just in general. So there was that. LMU winning a series with Washington. That's a big deal there. Nick Frasso returned to the rotation over the weekend and was solid in his first go-round. Obviously, him being able to be a starter really raises the ceiling for what the Lions can do. San Diego finished off their tournament at the Angels, the deal with the Angels, with a win over Minnesota today. They went 2-1. So there was, think it was just a good weekend for West Coast teams in general. It remains to be seen what becomes of that, obviously, but I came away kind of impressed with maybe the depth of quality teams we have out there. Again, small samples, we'll always have to be a little bit careful with that, but speaking in absolutes, but it felt like a pretty good weekend for teams in that part of the country.
Speaking generally, again, the ACC didn't have a bad weekend necessarily, but for a conference that we thought was going to be one of the more robust ones, I didn't think it had an outstanding weekend. There are a lot of good results. If you go look at what UNC did, you see 3-0. Like, that sounds really good, but it was more of a fight than you might expect. Florida State lost on opening day to Niagara. Duke lost to Army. These are things that we weren't really expecting. And for the most part, you know, we look at whole weekends. That's what I want to do. I don't want to pick out, like, oh, well, Florida State lost to Niagara. Like, can't do that. You got to sweep. Like, I mean, yes, but it is for a league that is trying to put in 10, 11 teams in the tournament. You do kind of need to nitpick it a little bit, I feel like. And so that's going to be something to watch, is the ACC as robust as we thought it was? Maybe it's just a tough weekend. You know, some of my feeling about this is definitely being influenced by the fact that Louisville, which I thought was clearly the best team in the conference, took a loss, a serious loss. So turn that around, and I'm probably not viewing it this way, but that is going to be something to look at going forward.
Part of that weekend for the league, of course, was Virginia losing a series, but I actually want to talk about the flip side of that. It'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Oklahoma winning that series with Virginia for a couple of reasons. I mean, one, it really ended up kind of flying under the radar because you've got these tournaments, you've got the series with Ole Miss and Louisville. So,
well, and like, I just feel like if Virginia had been ranked, and we were very close to ranking Virginia in the preseason, it probably doesn't fly under the radar because then it's a ranked series, but it wasn't. So it did, and it was in Pensacola.
Right.
It wasn't on TV or...
Right, so it wasn't streamed.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So all that factors into it for sure. But it was impressive the way in which Oklahoma won the series. They lose the Friday game. They lose the game with Cavalli on the mound. But they come back and win both ends of a doubleheader on Saturday. A tough thing to do against anybody. You know, Tyler Hardman had a really good weekend. They're going to need him to be a real dude in the lineup. I believe in the lineup more than you do. We've talked about that in the preseason, but... I can even admit that if they're going to be as good as if they're going to show any improvement, Tyler Hardman is probably going to have to be a, first team, all Big 12 type guy in the lineup. So that's part of it. He had a big weekend. Really liked what Dane Acker did.
He was impressive in that, the second game of that doubleheader.
Yeah. So to fill out the rotation, Cavalli, was just okay on Friday, had his moments. Certainly showed, the ability to dominate at times, but it was kind of a start we've seen from Cavalli before, where like there's some good things, there's some not so good things, and you end up kind of just, shrugging your shoulders on it. So we'll kind of have to see, because there's, as much as I like the arm, as much as, people who are paid to scout these players like the arm, there is still like a little bit of question about like, is he a workhorse? I mean, he was pretty decent last year, but missed some time with injury, only threw 60 some odd innings. Maybe it was 60 on the nose now that I think about it, which is about half of a full load if you're going to be a pitcher that gets into the postseason and makes a deep run, a little more than half maybe. So there is still some questions there, but Prater was good. And then Dane Acker was really good. So, if you're going to bet on Cavalli bouncing back a little bit, if they get, a better version of Cavalli and then Prater and Acker like they were this weekend, Oklahoma's going to be in really good shape in the rotation. So I think that's all good news for the Sooners. You take it all. It's a neutral site series for sure, even though it probably felt more like a road series for Oklahoma. And then the way in which they came back to win that series, I think, was all pretty impressive. So shouts to the Sooners for sure.
We've covered a lot of ground here. I want to touch on just one more thing, and it's opening day is such a joyous time, opening weekend is such a joyous time. I don't really want to delve into this too deeply, but we do need to talk a little bit about this, or just throw it out there anyway. Coastal Carolina coach Gary Gilmore, we've known for a few weeks that he might have liver cancer. Coastal announced as much in late January, and then Gilly, after Coastal won on opening day, confirmed that after more testing, they have found liver cancer and that he's on a waiting list to go to a really good hospital in Houston to get it treated. And whenever they call him he's ready to go, he's going to go and take a leave of absence. And so, you know, that's really tough for just in normal life. I can't imagine trying to, you know, go through a baseball season or any part of a baseball season like that, prepare for opening day like that. Gilly did say, he told reporters in Conway that, you know, that opening day game, that was probably the first time that for 3 hours he didn't think about the diagnosis since he heard it. So I guess baseball is being a little bit therapeutic there for Gary Gilmore, like it is for a lot of people around the country. So we're definitely thinking of Gilly. I know a lot of people around college baseball are thinking of him. He has a ton of respect from his peers in the game and from everyone that really interacts with him, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. He's one of the guys in the game you don't hear any bad things about. Just kind of universally well-liked. Certainly very, very successful. Of course, the baseball is secondary here, so we're certainly rooting for Coach Gilmore. You know he's going to fight like hell. We can guarantee that and certainly hope that he gets well soon and comes out on the other end of this. Certainly we will all be rooting for that. And, you know, just, you know, this is such a difficult thing to talk about, but certainly you knowing what we know about him, we know he's going to fight and it wouldn't be a shock to see him beat this and
yeah,
come
absolutely.
Out on the other end. So I know that, you know, you and I are not doctors. We cannot make any sort of like prognosis on that, but I mean, we know there's more to it than that. However, you know, he's such a fighter on the baseball field and coaching his teams. And so he's going to bring that to his fight with cancer. And he's got a great team there. He's going to MD Anderson. As a Houstonian, I'm very familiar with MD Anderson's work, largely thought of as one of the very best cancer hospitals in the world. So he's going to be getting top-notch care there. So certainly thoughts are with Coach Gilmore and with the doctors who are going to be working with him.
Absolutely. So my apologies for ending it on a somber note, but every once in a while, real life does intervene on this this wonderful game that we all like to take some time to appreciate. So I did want to mention that, and you know we are all thinking of Coach Gilmore as this continues. With that, Joe and I are going to wrap it up here. We will come back with another podcast later this week. I believe that will be on a Thursday. But if you just subscribe to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcasting app, be that Stitcher, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, it'll just pop right in your phone and you don't have to worry about it. So if you do that, take some time to subscribe. If you can, rate and review us. We greatly appreciate that as well. We're still trying to figure out some things as to what the second podcast is going to be going forward this season. We know we'll talk about the upcoming weekend. We want to get into some big picture topics, but if you have things that you want us to talk about or questions, you can either drop us a note on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy BA. Or if you just want to drop that straight into Apple Podcasts in a review and tell us what you're looking for, ask us a question there, we will find it there as well. So either of those options, quite all right with us. We really appreciate you guys for listening today, for following us along, for going to Baseball America and reading all the great stories we have over there. I think they're great anyway. I wrote some of them. Those are definitely great. We're so glad that the season is finally here. You know, we love the preseason stuff. I love putting together all of that, trying to figure out who's going to be good and whatnot. But what I really love is the results, right, Joe?
No, that's right. I mean, if we just did nothing but perpetually write about baseball that hadn't happened yet, like, man, that would be pretty bleak. So, yes, certainly glad they're playing games.
On the other hand, we would never be wrong.
That's true. No, that's
so,
a good point.
You know, pluses and minuses.
That's a good point.
But there will be more games throughout the week. Like I said, we're going to more games, you know, here on Monday, and Joe's got one lined up for Tuesday. So there's plenty of baseball now this time of year, and so we will be back here to cover it all on the Baseball America College podcast. So thank you to Joe. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll see you again on the next edition of the Baseball America College podcast.